Mary came at last to North Hill and the manor house belonging to Squire Bassett. She swung the great bell, and the sound was met at once by the furious baying of hounds. The door was opened by a manservant. She felt inferior and small, and was conscious of her old dress and shawl.
"I have come to see Mr. Bassett on very urgent business. The matter is of desperate importance, otherwise I would not disturb him at such an hour on a Sunday night."
"Mr. Bassett left for Launceston this morning. He was called away hurriedly, and he has not yet returned."
This time she could not control herself, and a cry of despair escaped her.
"If I do not see him within the hour, something terrible will happen, and a great criminal escape the hands of the law."
Stung with curiosity, the man showed her to the library, where Mrs. Bassett was in residence. The room, with its blazing fire, seemed unreal to her, and she blinked at the flood of light that met her eyes. A woman, whom she recognised immediately as the fine lady from Launceston Market Square, was sitting in a chair before the fire. She looked up in surprise. The servant repeated what Mary had just told him.
"Please, Mrs. Bassett,"
Mary asked somewhat impatiently,
"I must know when your husband is returning home."
"I have no idea," replied his lady. The squire had set out upon a highly dangerous mission. She said he had suspected the innkeeper of Jamaica Inn for some while of terrible crimes, but it was only this morning that proof had come into his hands. He had departed at once for Launceston to summon help, and intended to seize the inhabitants of the inn that night. Something in Mary's face must have warned her, for she turned very pale and reached out for the heavy bell pull that hung on the wall.
"You are the girl from the inn, the niece of the landlord. Stay where you are, or I will summon my servants."
Mary put out her hand.
"The landlord of Jamaica Inn is a relative to me by marriage only. I have definite proof of his guilt, and have come to warn the squire that the landlord intends to leave the inn tonight."
Mary sat down and stared blankly at the fire. She had come to the end of her resources. Having spent so long away, her uncle would discover her room empty and, knowing that she had betrayed him, would leave Jamaica Inn before Mr. Bassett arrived. When the clock on the mantelpiece chimed 8, Mary could bear it no longer. This dragging inactivity was worse than danger and pursuit.
"Forgive me," she said, rising to her feet, "but I am desperately anxious. I must know what is happening at Jamaica Inn, even if I walk back there myself tonight."
Mrs. Bassett stood up in a flutter of distress.
"Of course you are anxious, but you cannot possibly walk back there now alone. I will order the trap, and Richard shall go with you. He is most trustworthy and dependable, and can be armed in case of need."
In a quarter of an hour the trap drove up to the door. Richards, with 2 large pistols stuck in his belt, had orders to fire at anyone who threatened the trap. Mary climbed in beside him, fitted out by Mrs. Bassett with a heavy cloak and hood, thick rug, and foot warmer. It was only when the house was out of sight that Mary realised she had set out on what was probably to be a foolhardy and dangerous expedition. The drive was silent, for the most part, with no other sound but the steady clopping of the horse's hooves upon the road, and now and again an owl hooted from the still trees. The steep hill to Jamaica rose in front of them, white beneath the moon, and as the dark chimneys appeared above the crest, Richards fumbled with the pistols in his belt. Mary's heart beat fast now, and it seemed to her that the clop of the hooves rang too loudly on the surface of the road, and she wished they had been more silent. As they drew near to Jamaica Inn, Richards whispered in her ear,
"Would it be best if I go forward and see if they are there?"
Mary shook her head. From the silence it seemed as though the landlord had escaped.
"Better for me to go. I can risk an encounter with my uncle when you could not. Give me a pistol. I shall have little to fear from him then."
There were no wheel marks in the yard, no preparations for departure. She crept across to the stable and heard the pony move restlessly in his stall. Then they had not gone. She glanced at the shuttered house. Surely, if her uncle intended to leave, he would have gone before now. Mary hesitated. The situation had become odd now, and unreal. She ventured round the corner of the house. There was no light. The kitchen was black as a pit. She laid her hand on the knob of the door, and to her astonishment, the door opened. This easy entrance shocked her, and she was afraid to enter. No sound came to her. Some instinct told her that the kitchen had been empty for hours. There was a candle on the table, and she thrust it into the feeble glow of the fire, where it took light and flickered. She held it high above her head and looked about her. The kitchen was still strewn with the preparations for departure. The door to the passage was wide open, and the silence became more oppressive than before, strangely and horribly still. Something was not as it had been. Some sound was lacking that must account for the silence. Then Mary realized that the clock had stopped. She went forward slowly, the candle in one hand and the pistol leveled in the other. She turned the corner and saw that the clock had fallen across the narrow hall, the glass splintered in fragments on the stone flags. It was not until she came to the foot of the stairs that Mary saw what was beyond. The landlord of Jamaica Inn lay on his face amongst the wreckage. He looked even larger in death than he did before. There was blood on the stone floor, and blood between his shoulders, dark now and nearly dry, where the knife had found him. It was a long while before Mary moved. Something of her own strength had ebbed away, leaving her powerless, like the figure on the floor. A spider settled on her uncle's hand, and it seemed strange to her that the hand stayed motionless and did not seek to rid itself of the spider. Her uncle would have shaken it free. The spider knew that the landlord could not harm him. Mary knew this too, but she had not lost her fear of him. It was the silence that frightened her most. Now that the clock no longer ticked, her nerves strained for the sound of it. The slow, wheezing choke had been familiar and a symbol of normality. She backed away. The candle flickered in the draught, and when she came to the kitchen, her calm deserted her, and she ran blindly through the door like a thing pursued to where the familiar, stalwart figure of the squire's groom confronted her.
"He's dead! He's dead there on the floor!"
The groom saw by her face that her strength had gone. He put the cloak around her and helped her up into the trap and climbed onto the seat beside her. They fell silent, and both of them watched the road for the coming of the squire. Mary held up a hand.
"Listen. Can you hear something?"
They strained their ears to the north. The faint clop of horses was unmistakable, coming from beyond the valley, over the brow of the further hill. The clatter drew near, and Richards, in his relief, ran out upon the road to greet them, shouting and waving his arms.
"The landlord is dead, murdered," cried the groom to Squire Bassett. "I have his niece here with me in the trap."
Mr. Bassett directed Richards to take the trap up to the yard and stay with Mary while the squire and his men entered the inn. Presently the bleak and silent house lost its shuttered air as the men explored the empty house. They waited in silence until the squire himself came out into the yard and crossed to the trap. He was sorry, but he had bad news.
"I don't think your Aunt Patience suffered. She must have died at once. She could have known nothing. Believe me, I am very sorry. I wish I could have spared you this."
He stood by her, awkward and distressed. And then, seeing that Mary was better left alone and he could not help her, he stamped back across the yard to the inn. Mary sat motionless, shrouded in her cloak. And she prayed in her own way that Aunt Patience would forgive her, and that she would understand what she had tried to do. These were the only thoughts that brought her a measure of consolation, since she blamed herself. Had she not left Jamaica Inn, Aunt Patience might not have died. Once again, though, there came a murmur of excitement from the house, and there was a crash of splintering wood, and the shutters were torn away from the window of the barred room. Then, round the corner to the yard, 6 or 7 of them came, led by the squire, holding amongst them something that squirmed and wriggled and fought for release with hoarse, bewildered cries. Mary brushed aside the hood that covered her face and looked down upon the captive who stared up at her. It was Harry the peddler.
"What do you know of this fellow?" the squire said to Mary. "We found him in the barred room. He denies all knowledge of the crime."
"He was of the company. He came to the inn last night and quarrelled with my uncle. He locked him up in the barred room, threatening him with death. He had every reason to kill my uncle, and no one could have done it but he. He is lying."
"But the door was locked upon him."
This fellow had never been from the room at all. Look at his clothes, look at his eyes, dazzled still by the light.
He's not your murderer."
And Mary knew that what the squire had said was no more than the truth. Harry the peddler could not have committed the crime. He had lain there in the dark for over 24 hours, waiting for release. And during the long hours, someone had come to Jamaica Inn and gone again, his work completed, in the silence of the night. She waited in the trap, and she neither heard the peddler's blasphemies nor saw his furtive, narrow eyes, for she remembered other eyes that had looked upon her in the morning, and another voice that had spoken calm and cold, saying of his brother,
"He shall die for this."
There was the sentence, flung carelessly on the way to Launceston Fair.
"I've never killed a man. Yet."
There was the gypsy woman in the market square.
"There's blood on your hand. You'll kill a man one day."
All the little things she would forget rose up again and clamoured against him. But it was his tainted Merlin blood that would betray him. Like to like. One of a kind. The whole truth stared up at her in ugliness and horror, and she wished now that she had stayed, and he had killed her too. He was a thief. In the night he had come and was gone again. She heard the sound of a horse trotting at a steady, even pace. The rhythmic jogging tune had echo in her throbbing heart. The horseman drew rein and turned into the yard. The black riding cape gave no clue to his identity, but when he bowed and bared his head, the thick halo of hair shone white under the moon. And the voice that spoke in answer to the squire was gentle and sweet. "Mr. Bassett of North Hill, I believe." And he leant forward in his saddle, a note in his hand. "I have a message here from Mary Yellen of Jamaica Inn, who asks my help in trouble, but I see that I have come too late. You remember me, of course? We have met before. I am the vicar of Altenham."